Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and we begin this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you run to run and jump into the cool, refreshing chat room, which is free and accessible to all. Well, I mean, no right wingers, no jerks. But anybody else, just pick yourself out a name, a screen name, and a password, and away you'll go. You'll be jumping in alongside folks like Anatole, 4 of 9, Jeremy in Vermont, Tim from L.A., whose birthday it is today. Happy birthday, Tim San, as well as longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space again this evening to become Man Cave. And, of course, yep, little cowbell for everybody who was in the chat room at the beginning of the program. Jeremy in Vermont noting loud and clear on TuneIn. Bob, thank you, Jeremy. So we know that we are on, well, you know, we're not on the air. This is not a terrestrial broadcast. We're on the packets, on the electrons, on the spines. Oh, I think we need some new terms for a new internet web tubes driven world. It is, after all, not a big truck. No, not at all. No, I will not sing you happy birthday, Tim from L.A., because I actually have some regard for you. I think well of you. Hence, I will not sing happy birthday to you, and that way we won't have to worry about me getting the horn sued, because some idiot out there is getting 15 cents every time somebody sings happy birthday. Okay, so I don't know, into each life some rain must fall, and we all have our bears we must cross, Tim, and those are yours for today. Bob will not sing happy birthday. Nope. So, 3 minutes past the hour, and a gentle reminder, we try to raise $200 every evening to keep this effort afloat. This week we have the power bill to deal with. That's a real party. And this week we have also, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, there they are. Yeah, the fine folks who provide us the interweb tubes. One of those is due. So there we go. 10 folks at 20, 20 folks at 10, 40 folks at 5, one at 200. That's a have a show on me is 200. And thank you to everyone who has pushed us a little bit out in front and given us a little bit of a cushion in order to keep that cushion. Well, we need to raise $200 an evening. We raised $45 last night, and hopefully we'll raise $200 this evening. The PayPal button is, of course, under the tab Contribute at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And, there you will find a field of information to fill in. You can ignore some of the more nosy, invasive questions like your Aunt Gertrude's corset size, and just put in enough there to get to the next screen. Just get to the next screen, and there you do all the PayPal stuff, okay? That being the case, if you don't particularly care for PayPal, you can always use the U.S. Postal Service, who are still getting the job done despite the Republican Party's ongoing attempts to destroy it. You know, remember, the postal system used to be a cabinet level. I mean, like, when Lincoln would gather together his cabinet to discuss the war, the Postmaster General was right there. It's important, the U.S. Postal Service. You know, I would say an empire that cannot maintain a postal service, it probably really is an empire in steep decline. Right? Yeah. So if you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801, with the gentle reminder that I never see that stuff. That's what Boss Man Wayne takes care of, so the checks and money order should be made payable to The Horn and not to, you know, Bob Kincaid. Okay? Okay. So there we go. We got, well, preferably not just 200. In order, thanks, like I said, thanks going very kindly to Joan and Margaret and Chris and David, who have given us a bit of a cushion to work with. Thank you very kindly, all of you. And in order to hang on to that cushion, well, we need to keep up with fundraising. So that means we fell 155 short yesterday. So, 355. That would be great. 355. But everything is wonderful because it all represents sacrifice that you make in order to maintain independent, non-corporatized media without the added benefit of ads for vacuum cleaners with which you can pick up the spare gold dust spangles that fall through the cracks of your mattress or whatnot. Yeah. Okay? Okay. So it is Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday, having been named several years ago by our buddy Jim for a little exchange that took place in the for-profit radio over here in America's fifth smallest radio market or something like it, Beckley, West Virginia, when the morning right-wing blatherer, a 962nd tier conservative, took a call from one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers who said, "Steve, how come is it there is seashells in rocks in West Virginia? Because I have been here all my life, and I know for a fact we ain't nowheres near the beach." Mm-hmm. To which the 962nd level right-wing blatherer responded, "Well, caller," called everybody caller, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Yes, yes, indeedy. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic floral arrangement. Mm-mm. So we celebrate right-wing intellect on Titanic Tuesdays. Because it is. It is ever so Titanic. I thought you might be interested to know, after the conversation that I had with our buddy the Angry Indian last night, that we were right on the money. Not that it took a crystal ball and a frayed and tattered velvet robe with "Will Thee Kiss Me in the Dark, Baby" alongside "The Moon and Stars" written in glow-in-the-dark ink on the back. No. Angry sent it to me earlier today, a Twitter from Alex Jones. "Leftists exploit biker bloodbath to complain about white privilege." Doesn't take long, does it? We are still waiting for the cries of false flag. Because really, when it gets right down to it, Alex kind of digs him some biker gang. You get the idea. I thought, Titanic Tuesday is not always always about birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, perchers, booger eaters, libertarians, and Republicans. Although this first nominee could probably fit into any of those categories if you caught him once he was all good and liquored up. No. It was, what, 2-3 weeks ago when we featured Wolf Blitzer? You can almost hear the heels clicking, can't you? And that was in regard to the Baltimore uprising. When Wolf had to be schooled in his privilege. Well, in this case... so I'm going to hold off on Wolf Blitzer for a moment. I got a note from Jim here. Jim wants to know, did you get your needs assessment from Evan Jenkins? We got a mailer. If it comes from Evan, we really don't generally open it. But as a sidelight, and I got to do something. We've got the gizmo here for the gizmo line. Well, there's a hard line that comes in here as well, but we're going to have to get another gizmo for it. Because about a week ago, or sometime last week, I would have given real good money to have been able to share with you a phone call that landed here. I forget what was happening during the program, a clip was running or something, but the landline rang here. And damned if it didn't say Evan Jenkins on it. Right? So I picked it up, and maybe the green news was going, whatever. But I listened, and it was a conference call of Evan Jenkins answering West Virginia's questions. And I mean, I was in a furniture-kicking frenzy. Oh, if I could have potted that up and brought it into the program, and we could have, what fun we could have had with Evan Jenkins if he really was taking West Virginians' questions. Couldn't we have asked him for some fun, but we don't have a gizmo line for the landline, and that's another, that's something down the road, maybe, I don't know. But no, I didn't bother with my needs assessment, Jim, but he's out there working hard, you can tell, because, right, yeah. Exactly. Because he really isn't much interested in the real needs of West Virginia. Evan Jenkins isn't. Evan Jenkins is interested in what the Koch brothers and Alex define as being the real needs of West Virginia. Because Evan Jenkins, of course, on the campaign trail, had a war going on with Nick Joe Rahal saying, I love coal. He loves that Negro Obama. But I love coal. And Nick Rahal would say, no, I do not love that Negro Obama. I love coal. You do not love coal. You are not a real Republican. You used to be a Democrat. Wash your mouth out. And it was like that for months. And it's been a blessed relief to have some of that crap gone, but it isn't gone because we're getting needs assessments. When, in fact, if you were to patiently try to explain to a numbnuts like Evan Jenkins that what West Virginia needs is to transition away from a toxic mono economy to some sort of a sustainable economy for the 21st century, it's just not going to happen because the Koch brothers don't want it. And see, Evan Jenkins, remember what I said the other night about it taking 100 years to teach hillbillies to enjoy the velvet-lined shackles of the coal industry? They used to be kind of thuggish, they'd shoot you on sight, send a train through your coal camp, shoot up the houses, pregnant women hiding under the house, that kind of thing. Really happened. They called it the Bull Moose Special, went up Paint Creek. Well, they don't do that anymore, because they eventually realized it was counterproductive. Instead, they make it so that the coal people can go into backbreaking debt. That way they don't get uppity, and that way they don't raise raise safety issues down to the mine. And then when one of them blows up and 29 people get killed, CNN can stick a camera in a woman's face, and she'll just say, well, we always knowed coal mining was dangerous. See how it works? And Evan Jenkins, just because he gets to go to Congress, is no less one of those velvet manacled servants. He is not his own man. He is not his own. He does not operate under his own agency. He's owned. He's a creature. He's a bond servant of the coal industry and the Koch brothers. And as long as he wishes to remain a member of the Congress of the United States, he will ever be so. The day he decides he wants to be a free person, he ain't a congressman anymore. And that's the case for a lot of people in Congress, not all of them by any stretch of the imagination, but a lot of them. Me, I'm free. I am just that free. I owe not a goddamn penny to the miserable, disgusting, toxic, filthy, foul, vile, revolting, murderous, blood-soaked, sickening coal industry. Not a penny. And you know what? Evan Jenkins has a lot more money than me. Probably always will. But for me, it's a lot easier to look myself in the mirror to shave in the morning. Because I don't see a reflection coming back at me of someone who has no free will. Mm-mm. Him? Yeah. He looks in the mirror and, well, he sees a creature. A thing, a tool, no more nor less than a pickaxe, or a coal shovel, or a bulldozer. In fact, the coal industry thinks more of a D9 Caterpillar than they do of Evan Jenkins. They're probably more expensive. I know for a fact they are. A bulldozer on a mountaintop removal site costs more than Evan Jenkins costs to buy and send to Congress. Mm-hmm. But boy, I tell you what, when you get those servants conditioned, they can be mighty helpful, can't they? Yeah. So, no, I didn't fool with my Evan Jenkins needs assessment. But I sure would have enjoyed bringing on board the audio of that stupid phone call last week. Another gizmo's on the list. Marty with a question. He says, I want to know who is reporting on any person or group of people who sings happy birthday to anyone and how they're collecting the money. ASCAP or BMI. And that's why restaurants don't sing it anymore, because they have to subscribe. They go and ASCAP shows up and they peck on the door and they say, you know, you playing music or yada, 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 yada. And you go from there. And then, you know, the great-grandson of the guy who wrote Happy Birthday, who never did a damn thing to earn the money, gets paid. Right? Right. And ASCAP sends a check. Let's see. Hold on here a minute. No, I'm still not going to sing, Marty. How about instead of Happy Birthday, you sing for He's a Jolly Good Fellow? No, I am not going to sing. Can't make me sing. Won't sing. Okay? Are we all the way down to the ground on that? Good. Anyway, so back to Titanic Tuesday. And that Titanic, that great big ship of journalism forever steaming toward the iceberg, Wolf Blitzer. He had a sit down today with Bernie Sanders. Now let's get something straight about Bernie. Bernie is not a smooth politician. He's not got that sort of smarmy, Vaseline-ed, Brill-creamed-up polish about him of, say, a Lindsey Graham. Because, see, that Lindsey was taught all of the social graces, mercy sakes, while growing up down on the family place, the plantation down there at Smoldering Chode, he was. And to a certain extent, Lindsey will always be a darling of the, you have to say it that way, darling. You know, it's not quite an A and it's not quite an O, it's a darling. He's always going to be a darling of the for-profit media because he says clever and quirky things. For instance, I was over, and we're going to get back to Bernie and Titanic Wolf. We're going to get back to them, I promise. For instance, over in the Washington Post yesterday, Dana Milbank was positively charmed by Lindsey Graham cracker. Mm-hmm, he was. Because Lindsey seems to be acknowledging, because Dana Milbank, yeah, well, you're right. Jeremy in Vermont noting Bernie doesn't suffer fools well, not in Washington, not on the news, and never in Vermont. And by the way, the I Want a Pony Nader crowd has gone full on. I saw one of these posts earlier on Facebook. They've gone full on jackass on Bernie, calling him things like an Uncle Tom and a sellout and that kind of thing. So, you know, go figure. Surprise! But for some reason or another, the Washington Post actually allowed an article to go up that was titled "The GOP Field is a Clown Car." No, you're a little late to the party, Dana. The GOP field now is a clown freighter. It's a clown double-decker bus. But nonetheless, I find it interesting that meme has made it all the way into the thin oxygen ranks of the upper atmosphere of the for-profit media. Dana Milbank writes, "If you can't take a joke," Lindsey Graham has said, "don't run for president." And Dana takes it from there to act sort of in praise of, and it's kind of damning with faint praise, I guess, Lindsey Graham's candor about the number of Republicans in the hunt for the Republican nomination for the presidency of the new United States of America. And to an extent, you know, I think this is actually a real strategy. You ever seen one of those, and it was probably narrated by Sir David Attenborough or Sir Richard Attenborough, one of those nature documentaries that shows like a whole bunch of those itty-bitty tiny little piss ants, and they're taking down some really big, scary-ass, you know, beetle. More on beetles later. Not John Paul, George, and Ringo. The six-legged kind. Although they may have Liverpudlian accents, I don't know. But they can do that. All those itsy-bitsy, little, teeny-tiny, little piss ants, if you get a bajillion of them together, they'll just swarm all over the poor little beetle or poor little spider or poor little wasp. And I mean, and no matter the firepower that the beetle with those great big goddamn pinchers in the front may have, or the wasp with that, you know, hell bending stinger, and you know what, all of his or her wasp buddies are just, you know, by God, you take a swat at a yellow jacket, and 900 bajillion yellow jackets will come after your ass. But if there's one yellow jacket on the ground and a bunch of those little piss ants have gone after the yellow jacket, the rest of the yellow jackets are like, fuck it. Yeah, that's his tough luck. Nice to know you, Phil. Well, I think that's the Republican strategy. There's not one of those little piss ants, whether it be Snot Walker or Chris Christie. Okay, well, he's never mind. I don't know if he qualifies as a little piss ant. Or Marco Rubio or Piyush Jindal or any of those goobers or Governor Pastor Brother Mike Huckstraby. There's not one of them who can take down Hillary Clinton by themselves. Not one. But if they swarm, they think maybe they can do her enough damage to render her motionless, and then they can get up there and all together they can chew on her flesh. Right? Yeah. As Jeremy in Vermont knows, there are 20-plus running clowns on the far, far right wrong. Now the debates are in a real question. They've realized how badly the last 32 affected them. And frankly, the stage managers are having a hard time figuring out how to fit them on the damn stage. I mean, hell, you're talking about having to have a stage big enough to put up a chorus line now. And the clown shoes, Jesus! But Dana Milbank had some love what did our buddy Steve in New York refer to Lindsay as? Wait a minute. It won't take but a minute. No, that's the wrong one. We've got an official name now. This is why I want to get it right. Her Majesty President Lin... Because there's a photo that goes with it, and I wish I could just do something with it. Her Majesty President Lindsay Scarlett O'Hara Smoldering Chode Doolittle Graham. And this is a beautiful, beautiful little Photoshop. It's Lindsay's face on Scarlett O'Hara with the little off-the-shoulder thing going on and the big floppy-brimmed hat and the great big green bow tied under under Scarlett's little chin. Uh-huh. And Ron and Raleigh with a note says, I wonder, did they hold Cotillion down at Smoldering Chode? Well, of course they did. Randy pointing out that the clown car now is more like Insane Clown Posse, but really I've got more respect for the ICP than I do the Republican hopefuls, as they're called. But anyway, Dana Milbank in the Washington Post yesterday had a little bit of love for Lindsay, because Lindsay recognizes that this is a bit of an absurd situation. Yes, he does. Oh, mercy. Has anybody got my julep ready? You people are just reprehensible, I tell you. Is it that hard to have a julep ready by 6:30 in the evening? Mercy sakes. Most people take their juleps at 5:30, and I give you people an extra hour, and you still can't get it to me. Because Lindsay gave Dana Milbank a quote. This was when he was talking in New Hampshire last month, actually. I do, and Lindsay said, I do bar mitzvahs, birthday parties, weddings, funeral. Call me. I will come. And he wants people in New Hampshire and Iowa and South Carolina, Stan, and whatnot, to look to the 35 people running for president on the Republican side and just shoot up among us until you get one of us out of the tree. Knock them out, John. Somebody up here got to have some relief. And Dana Milbank then notes that they didn't give him much love at CBS this morning when they made him wait through a whole bunch of stories yesterday before they got to him announcing that he might someday have an announcement on June 1st. Right. They made Lindsay wait through the Amtrak crash, trouble in Iraq, a biker gang fight, the Mad Men finale, daredevils killed in Yosemite, murders in Northwest Washington, and a great white shark who's on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Only after that, Milbank notes, did Lindsay get his moment. I'm ready. I am ready for my close-up. We didn't need voices back then. We had faces. Max! Mm-hmm. They asked him about whether or not he would use the CBS platform to announce his candidacy, and he said, it is a beautiful platform, but it's not as beautiful as Central South Carolina, where I will make an announcement on June 1st, he said, clutching his pearls. And this went on for a while. But the real pull quote comes a little further down in the story, and this is one for the ages. This is right up there with all those men he's going to let into the Oval Office. Milbank reports Graham has potential to break out of the pack by saying some truly zany things. Last month, really? See, and that's the state of the Republican Party now. Saying that we need to kill Social Security and eliminate Medicaid and Medicare are no longer zany. They're no longer enough to get somebody to come after you with the great big butterfly net. They're considered serious policy alternatives. But anyway, Lindsay, again, speaking last month, and he said he was worried about not having any offspring to pay into Social Security. And he said, how do you fix that? Well, Strom Thurmond had 4 kids after he was 67. Do I have any volunteers? One guy raised his hand, but he didn't understand the question. Now, this is no fair and no fun. Lindsay is working his own shtick now. I swear to God, if he makes reference to a barbecue down at Smoldering Chode, I'm sending an invoice. You understand me? I really am. So there's that. And in the meantime, and he's got a new pack, and American Acts Greatness or some such. What? Thank you for the reminder, Jim. Meanwhile, Irish Dave notes that he wants brackets leading to March Hare Madness, about March of 2016, brackets leading to a Final Four. And he says, by the way, I'm still searching for the Titanic gravy boat. Oh, that... That gravy boat sailed long ago, Irish Dave. Bill in Helena, Montana, noting, the other day I arrived at the conclusion that the GOP has upgraded the clown car to a cattle car that is powered by cocaine. K-O-C-H-A-I-N-E. Just saying. Yeah. Cocaine. Get it? Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. So anyway, to go back to our original Titanic nominee today, because this here is Titanic Tuesday. I swear they're scheduling around us now. Hi, Wolf. Hi, Wolf's producer. How you doing? Yeah, send a check. They booked Bernie to talk to Wolf because Wolf is a serious for-profit journalist enjoying the respect of almost a dozen people in Washington, D.C. So poor, so Bernie. No. And Bernie explained to him about how we need to make America a better place. I mean, I think that's a good blanket statement. The topic being, oh, income inequality, how we raise up the people out of the economic malaise that has been imposed upon them by the richest people in the country, that sort of thing. Let's roll the, let's go to the audio. Wait a minute. Hold on. Damn it. Back to you, Wolf.
Income inequality is certainly a major issue in the 2016 presidential race. Hillary Clinton has made headlines over the revelation that she and her husband, the former president Bill Clinton, made about $30 million since last year alone in speaking fees, $5 million for the book that she wrote. Listen to what she said about that when she spoke to reporters just a little while ago.
On your income disclosure.
Now, hold on a minute. Before we go to Hillary talking about the $30 million they made, and not that I think that $30 million is, you know, chump change, but really? We're having a hissy about $30 million when Charles and David Koch are so goddamn rich, when there's one human being running for governor in the state of West Virginia worth $1.4 billion, and they're worrying about some tawdry little $30 million for Hillary Clinton? My God, please. In the world of money in this country, the Clintons are still trailer trash, okay? I mean, why, straight up, never left Arkansas, don't matter if they lived in, they live in the Hamptons, white trash compared to the wealth of a Sheldon Adelson or a Chuck and Dave Koch or any of the other bajillionaires who are willing to spend $2 billion to keep Hillary from getting in the White House. Right? Please. The Clintons are not money. Now, they've busted their asses to make money after Bill left the presidency, but name me one who didn't. Okay, Jimmy Carter. I mean, really? To be fair, dim leader hasn't gone out there hustling much, but he didn't have to. He made his on the front end. What was the last number? Cheney pulled down something like $39 billion for Halliburton? Please, $30 million. Oh. But anyway, back to the for-profit media.
Recently, that just came out on Friday, you are in the tip-top echelon of earners in this country. How do you expect everyday Americans to relate to you?
Well, obviously, Bill and I have been blessed, and we're very grateful for the opportunities that we had, but we've never forgotten where we came from, and we've never forgotten the kind of country that we want to see for our granddaughter, and that means that we're going to fight to make sure that everybody has the same chances to live up to his or her own God-given potential. So I think that...
I swear. This is like the third time I've heard this clip. And Hillary does a good job of keeping it together and not just looking at this member of the for-profit media and saying, really? But where she says God-given potential, I swear I think she was like one millimillionth of a phoneme away from saying goddamn potential. It's you can almost hear it. It's on the way out when it turns into given.
To live up to his or her own God-given potential. So I think that most Americans understand that the deck is stacked for those at the top, and I am running a campaign that is very clearly stating we want to reshuffle that deck. We want to get back to having more opportunities for more people so that they can make more out of their own lives.
Hey, can I point something out here? Because it's kind of interesting. This is a 4-minute clip, and we are a minute and 14 seconds into it, and nobody said middle class. I know it's going to sound maybe a little nutty, but that's a good thing. No one has said middle class. Got to raise up the working class. Got to raise up the income potential of everybody. Just a little bit before airtime, I saw a news alert that the city of Los Angeles has voted to raise its minimum wage to $15 per hour by the year 2020. And I suppose that those of us who think that income equality matters were supposed to go, yay! Of course, by 2020, $15 an hour would probably need to be maybe $22 an hour. Because we're still stagging blue nose, not still talking about minimum wages and not living wages. There is no, that ain't a living wage. Now, I'll take that back. If you get to $15 an hour and you've got a two-wage earner household in which mommy and mommy both work for 80 hours a week at two $15 an hour jobs each, then you got a chance. Or maybe if you've got a two-income or a single-income household and daddy works works three $15 an hour jobs so daddy can stay home with the youngins, then you got a chance. But nobody's going to be wandering off through the waving fields of alfalfa on that. We're still missing the boat. But anyway, this isn't about me. Shut up, Bob.
All right, let's talk about that and more with the Vermont Senator, Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders.
Okay, so we've got Wolf talking now. And that means, by definition, you're going to be wanting to reach for your hockey puck and your duct tape. Okay, good. Are we all set? Trying to give a little time there. Okay. Ask a penetrating serious for-profit journalism question, Wolf.
Senator, thanks very much for coming in. What's your reaction when you hear say that about income inequality, which is a huge issue for you?
Well, it's an issue I've been talking about for many, many years, and I think what we need to do is be very specific about what we are going to do about it. Today, Wolf, 99% of all new income is going to the top 1%.
Of which you're a member, Wolf, but I won't be so crass as to point that out.
Top one-tenth of 1%.
Do you include her in that top 10%, one-tenth of 1%? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know exactly. They may be, but I don't know if they're that high. But
is that a problem, though? Is that a problem that she and her husband made $30 million for the past 16 months
no,
or so?
No. And see, this is a setup. This is Wolf Blitzer asking the atheist lady in Oklahoma whether or not... because it's pretty clear that Senator Sanders gets started on the issue that really means something to him, and for-profit media member of the real 1%, Wolf Blitzer, tries to turn it into a wrestling match on Saturday night down to the Barton Civic Center between the Red Avenger and the Blue Death. You get the idea. Come on, Bernie, we didn't bring you on here to talk to the American people about your policy ideas. The American people are a bunch of damn rubes. Say something nasty about Hillary. Tell somebody that you're going to break a folding chair over or something. I mean, we got entertainment to run here. This ain't a news operation, Bernie. I mean, just go back. Just listen to Wolf try to steer this into a personality conflict.
I've been talking about for many, many years, and I think what we need to do is be very specific about what we are going to do about it. Today, Wolf, 99% of all new income is going to the top 1%. Top one-tenth of 1%.
You include her in that top 10%, one-tenth of 1%, is that what you're saying?
No, that's not what he's saying, Wolf, you pig. He didn't say that at all. He didn't even remotely intimate that. But Wolf wouldn't know actual news or actual policy if it came up and bit him. and then the actual news or actual policy would die from, you know, whatever that he got from biting Wolf Blitzer. He didn't say that at all. Not even close. But, you know, they had the editorial meeting. Okay, Wolf, we're going to have Bernie Sanders on for you. Let's see. You think you can get him to attack Hillary Clinton? Say something nasty about her hair, maybe, or the fact that, I don't know, he doesn't like the shade of her pantyhose? Do you think he could do that for us, Wolf? Absolutely, sir.
Don't know exactly. They may be, but I don't know if they're that high. But
is that a problem, though? Is that a problem that she and her husband made $30 million for the past 16 months or so, speaking and writing a book?
No swearing. No swearing. Not going to swear. Too early to do a bunch of swearing in the program. See, there's a subtext at work here. Bernie is a... Got to look around, see if anything. Bernie is a socialist. That means Bernie is supposed to want to round up Hillary Clinton and Bill and all the people with a lot of money and take them out and shoot them and dump their wealthy bodies into trenches somewhere because, you know, that's what socialists do.
It's a problem, but the more serious problem is, what do we do about the grotesque level of income and wealth inequality in America today? So what do you have to do? What we need to do is create millions of decent-paying jobs by rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure.
There's an idea. Now, what are the geniuses back? What are the geniuses in Mission Control there controlling the video doing? They've just split-screened Bernie to where he's a little tiny sliver of the screen, and the rest of it is B-roll footage of Hillary Clinton talking. I submit that actually, if based on the tenor of what Bernie was talking about, if you want to go to some B-roll, show some pictures of the Koch brothers, how about? Or Dim Leader. Or Jebby. Why no picture of Jebby? One of the wealthiest families in America. Why isn't Wolf Blitzer asking if that's a problem for Jebby? Or a problem for, I don't know, Scott Walker, who is a wholly owned subsidiary of Koch Industries.
No, we can't have that.
What you need to do is say to the wealthiest people and largest corporations, you know what? You're going to have to start paying your fair share of taxes. You can't stash your money in the Cayman Islands. What you're going to have to do, if you really want to grow the middle class, is say...
Oh, it took 2 minutes and 20 seconds before somebody said middle class. Now, to be fair, though, if we grow the middle class, that means that, by definition, we're not growing it from the top down, we're growing it from the bottom up. So we're trying to get some people out of the lower classes and into the middle class, but you're still talking about a class-based society. And that means there's still a problem here. But Bernie has to walk a fine line, because if he talks about the working class, then the next thing you know, they're going to be playing the Internationale every time they introduce him on screen. Which ain't a problem for me, but it is for most of America. So, you know, poor Bernie is trying to explain income inequality to a man whose IQ is rendered to be that of about my shoe size by virtue. Well, he's driven stupid by all the money that he has made and accumulated over the years as a professional for-profit media journalist with Chicken Noodle News, bringing you the world.
America today. So, what do you have to do? What we need to do is create millions of decent-paying jobs by rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure. What you need to do is say to the wealthiest people and largest corporations, you know what? You're going to have to start paying your fair share of taxes. You can't stash your money in the Cayman Islands. What you're going to have to do, if you really want to grow the middle class, is say that everybody in this country, regardless of their income, if they have the ability, they're going to get a college education. And today I just introduced legislation that would make public colleges and universities tuition-free.
Where's the money going to come from?
Naturally, yeah. The guy from the 1% asks, where's the money going to come from? Meanwhile, the struggling classes below Wolf's vision are asking, really? I got a fighting chance at getting into college? I can go and study and be a veterinarian instead of a freaking Walmart worker? I can do that? Really? I'm game. Where's the money going to come from, huh? It's about the money.
Tax on Wall Street speculation.
Okay, I don't want to miss that. I think that's kind of important. Where is the money going to come from?
Their income. If they have the ability, they're going to get a college education. And today I just introduced legislation that would make public colleges and universities tuition-free.
Where's the money going to come from?
A tax on Wall Street speculation. And that's exactly where it should talk about.
Okay, talk about it. Well, if you'll shut up, Wolfie will. And the same thing applies to me to a certain extent here, but I have to point something out. Going back to 2004, and this is just to give you a sense of how far ahead of the curve the horn is. It was 2004 when Dr. Bill O'Brien was still, along with me, on the for-profit terrestrial air of America's fifth smallest radio market. It was 2004 when Dr. Bill said, you know, I just got back, and you know, that lovely voice that Dr. Bill has, I just got back from paying my property taxes. And I can't do Dr. Bill's. I can't do that accent. But he said, I paid my property tax for my dog, and my car, and my house, and those taxes go to support the county in which I live. If I go, and we still had a sales tax on food back then, he said, if I go to the grocery store and I buy a loaf of bread, I pay a property tax on that. Or I pay a sales tax on that. There's all kinds of sales taxes on gasoline. Sales tax on you on you trade in the old car for a new car, you pay a sales tax on that. You pay a tax to get married. You pay a tax to go fishing or hunting. The only people who don't pay a tax are the people. They don't pay a tax on their transactions on Wall Street. And Dr. Bill asked the question, what if we had just a tiny little tax on every stock transaction on Wall Street? Can you imagine the income, the revenue stream that would generate for our country, to make our country greater, to live up to the promise of America? I remember that as though it were yesterday, and it was every bit of 11 years ago. That's how far out in front of the curve Dr. Bill is. So now I'm going to back the clip up again, and neither I nor Wolf are going to interrupt, I hope.
Ability, they're going to get a college education. And today I just introduced legislation that would make public colleges and universities tuition free.
Where's the money going to come from?
A tax on Wall Street speculation. And that's exactly where it should
talk about that. What does that mean, a tax on Wall Street speculation?
What it means is right now you have people who are becoming phenomenally wealthy by speculating in derivatives and every other type of esoteric instrument that they can. People are getting very rich on Wall Street. What we're going to impose is what exists in dozens of countries around the world, a very modest tax on the transference of large amounts of stock.
What does that mean? I'm very modest. Is that going to pay for tuition-free education?
More than that. This is a very effective and progressive way to raise money. The estimate is it could bring in as much as $300 billion a year.
You think Republicans are going to go along with this?
No, of course they're not.
Well, then if they're not going to go along with it, it's not going to become the law.
No. Well, I don't think it's going to be passed tomorrow. But I think what we have to do is the American people will go along with it. The American people think it's absurd that our young people are leaving school deeply, deeply in debt. And young people can't afford to go to college.
Is Hillary Clinton committed to this cause, as are you?
Wolf, you have to ask Hillary.
Well, what do you think?
I don't work for her. I don't know.
Isn't it cute? Wolf, you're going to have to ask Hillary. I just want to believe that in the middle of Wolf, yeah, and going to have to ask Hillary is, Wolf, you moron, you're going to have to ask Hillary. Why? Why? Why does Wolf so poor, so black blitzer even ask a question like that? I mean, is that what the Cub reporter who's the producer in his ear is telling him to ask? Is that the only thing? I mean, come on. Is Wolf Blitzer going home at night and masturbating over photographs of Hillary Clinton? I think it's a fair question at this point in time. You got, give me Bernie Sanders for 30 minutes on this program. I can promise you, I will not ask him once about Hillary Clinton because I don't give a damn what Hillary Clinton thinks, or more importantly, I don't give a damn what he thinks about what Hillary Clinton thinks. I want to know what Bernie Sanders thinks. But these miserable pukes in the for-profit media can't think in any other terms than the wrestling match. And that's why you wind up with, well, what does Hillary think? Now, it's a different thing to say, well, the Republicans go along with it, because the Republicans won't go along with anything. They're Mikey with the Life cereal, only Mikey won't eat it. He still hates everything, and he won't try it, and he won't like it. You get it? So, we got a lot more Titanic intellect to go through this evening. We really, really do. And I'm sure we'll get to them. You, of course, can bring your own Titanic nominees to the table, if you wish. You know how to reach the program, right? Area code 304-574-8178 or area code 304-663-4676. That, of course, spells HORN, 304-663-HORN. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, if you want to reach me on Twitter, at Bob Kincaid. On Facebook, Bob Kincaid. He sure does like to say that, doesn't he? Yes, he does. And, of course, email is Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, at gmail.com. And a quick update as we head into the second hour of the program. We have the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen coming up. Thank you to some contributions, two of them anonymous, taken together between our two anonymous contributors and our good friend Glenn, who is there ever so frequently. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, all, one and all. We are at $135 for fundraising this evening. That means that between now and 9 o'clock, we could actually raise up the ordinary $200 we try to raise every evening. Thank you very, very kindly, one and all. So, a little break. Your call, we've got a caller on 304 on the Skype line. We've got a caller there, and we the horn line is still open. And remember, just a quick note. If you've never called this program before and you've been sitting around saying, I sure would like to call that Bob Kincaid, call him what? Yeah, I get it. No, it's easy. This is probably the most comfortable call-in program in the world. Nobody's going to hurry, and we're going to, hey, hold it right there. We're going to take a break and sell some gold speculative futures. Remember, buy high and sell low. That's the way we keep right-wing radio on the air. No, there's not going to be any of that. So if you've never tried it, jump in. Hell, maybe you'll get a... If you do, it's the most, it's the least, and quite frankly, the most we can do. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thank you for coming home. Sorry that the chairs are all warm. I left them here, I could have sworn. These are my salad days, maybe an eternal way. Just another play for today. Oh, but I'm proud of you, but I'm proud of you. Nothing left to make me feel small.
It's Tuesday, May 19, 2015.
The monument to the hubris of the oil industry sitting on our waterfront.
The paddle in Seattle. Kayaktivists hit the water to stop Shell's Arctic drilling. Good news for breeders. Study finds new rules for power plants will save lives. But Republicans are already trying to stop them. Plus,
and for the third time, the membership said no.
Indigenous tribe in British Columbia says no, again, to natural gas.
All of that obstructionism and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I emit greenhouse gases.
Too much information, Congresswoman Cynthia Lummis, Republican from Wyoming.
You can measure our emissions with a high degree of accuracy.
No, really, we're cool. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I don't know what that hearing was on where Congresswoman Cynthia Lummis was talking about her emissions, but I do know that the Sierra Club apparently sent her a box of Gas X to help with her emissions problems after
yes.
that speech.
Yes, they did.
And I guess what she was getting at was we all emit carbon dioxide when we breathe, is what she was trying
to
say.
And some methane and other things, too.
Right. So was she trying to say, hey, we all emit greenhouse gases, so we don't need to do anything about it?
Something like that.
Okay, then. The Republican plan for dealing with global warming is going very well. What do you have for us today, Desi Doyen?
Well, first, as we reported last week, the Obama administration has given oil giant Shell conditional permission to drill for oil in the fragile, melting Arctic this summer, despite Shell's tragic comedy of errors the last time they tried to drill in the Arctic back in 2012. Over the weekend in Seattle, a flotilla of hundreds of environmental activists in kayaks protested Shell's massive Arctic drilling rig, now docked in Seattle Harbor, in an attempt to stop oil drilling in the fragile Arctic and to act on climate change.
And that rig is massive. We had Seattle City Councilman Mike O'Brien on the broadcast yesterday. Here's how he described Shell Oil's 400-foot Polar Pioneer rig.
The number of us and the size of us compared to this, you know, this monstrosity that's, you know, the monument to the hubris of the oil industry sitting on our waterfront.
Seattle's progressive city council is trying to take action, fining Shell for not having the right permit to use Seattle's harbor. But as Councilman O'Brien said on Monday's broadcast, they feel they have to try.
Companies like Shell that have so much money and so much power to disregard the health of our planet and our people need to be held accountable and not do this. Shell is an energy company. They can be investing in renewable resources just as well as they can in oil, and they're just being stubborn because they see money to be made in this, and we need to make it clear that as people and citizens of this planet, we're not going to allow that behavior to be tolerated anymore.
Hippie.
Meanwhile, good news for breathers. The first independent, peer-reviewed study of President Obama's new historic emission standards for the nation's power plants, called the Clean Power Plan, will not only reduce the nation's greenhouse gas emissions, but will also save thousands of lives every year by also cutting toxic emissions. The lead author of that new study, Dallas Bertraw, published in the journal Nature Climate Change, says that when the power sector begins shifting away from coal-fired power plants to meet these new standards, the public health benefits will accrue immediately.
So this is going to actually save people's lives?
Yes, Bertraw says immediately, a matter of days to weeks.
And so who could possibly be against that?
Well,
as if I don't know.
Funny you should ask. Those new clean power plan standards are opposed by the dying coal industry and their friends in Congress who are blocking the new clean power plan standards, even though the standards are required by a 2007 Supreme Court ruling. Republican Senator Shelley Moore Capito from Coal State, West Virginia, has introduced new legislation to erase those new standards as if they'd never been written, and also would rewrite the Clean Air Act to block the EPA from setting any future standards.
You know, come 2016, I hope the electorate erases people like Shelley Moore Capito and all of these other elected officials who are standing in the way of saving lives. Unbelievable.
But some good news. While the kayaktivists in Seattle were taking it to the streets or the waves, an indigenous tribe in Canada voted to reject an offer of over $1 billion to allow the construction of a natural gas pipeline and a natural gas export terminal on their harbor. The Lac Willoms Band in northwest British Columbia says, quote, "It's not about the money, but about preserving their food, their water, and their legacy, which they say is not for sale."
Wow. They turned down $1 billion?
Yes.
Well done, Lac Willoms tribe. I'm impressed. For much more on that story and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download the Green News Report anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's not about the money, money, money. We don't need your money, money, money. We just want to make the world day. Forget about the bright day. Ain't about the cha-ching, cha-ching. Ain't about the, yeah. Bubbling, bubbling, want to make the world day.
Just a pronunciation note in case you're wondering. That West Virginia senator that Brad and Desi mentioned there in their always engaging Green News Report, C-A-P-I-T-O is pronounced here in Appalachia, camel toe. Shelley Moore, camel toe. Yes. Just so folks will know. It's a regional dialect thing, kind of like pronouncing O-I-L, all. Okay? This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. By the way, the anonymous contributor who kindly provided $100 of this evening's fundraising thus far has called on other members of the Horn Family Commune congregation to match the same so that we can get done with yesterday's and today's fundraising and maintain our wee little cushion that we have out front. Thank you. Thank you, one and all. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. And, well, you know all about the U.S. Postal Service. If you don't, let me know. Send you the address. Hey, look, it's Carol Baker. Hey, Carol. Carol. Are we having issues? Yes, we are, because I'm using the wrong damn button. There. You'd think after two flipping weeks.
It happens.
I swear I haven't been into the communion tequila.
Yes, you have. It's okay. You can talk to me.
Okay, just a little bit. Just didn't use the swirly straw. Are we good?
We're good.
Okay. Okay. I figured there had to be a little screaming going on somewhere near Hooterville during the last hour.
Well, yeah. You know, it's like I'm listening to this nonsense with Wolf Blitzer, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, if he would just say Hillary's the reason we can't have nice things and she's everything that's wrong with America and just send Bernie on his way, it would have saved a whole lot of time. He forgets that it was Cheney's Halliburton who lost $1 billion that they can't account for in Iraq, that they don't have to pay back.
Oh, he doesn't forget it. I think he probably gets a dividend from it, don't you?
Yeah, there's that. There is that. But anyway, I came to you with a couple of stories today. The first one I really, really loved. And this is a total non-hockey puck moment. It came from the Charlotte Observer.
Yes.
There's a gentleman there by the name of Taylor Batten, who is an editorial page editor. He wrote a light blog post last month about Mayor Dan Clodfelter proclaiming April 30th, Honesty Day, in Charlotte. And Honesty Day, as it turned out, is observed on that date nationwide. So he noted a Wikipedia explanation of what it's all about. On this day, anyone participating may ask any question they choose, and the opposing person should give a truthful and straightforward answer. So he invited readers to say what they would ask and of whom. Well, it you can imagine that it didn't take very long, and a gentleman by the name of David Fry of Charlotte was among those who responded to the Observer editor's question. Why do you support such a liberal agenda? And this young man named Taylor Batten didn't get snarky or didn't say, no, we didn't, or anything like that. He just addressed it in the most polite way, and I wanted to share his answer with you.
Oh, do please. This should be interesting.
Yes. He said, well, rules are rules, so I suppose you deserve an honest answer for Honesty Day, so here goes. We believe that everyone is created equal. We believe that prevention is a heck of a lot cheaper than a cure. We believe that children should not bear responsibility for the sins of their parents. We believe people should not be treated as lesser citizens with fewer rights because of whom they love. We believe a thriving city, state, and nation rests to a great degree in the quality of its public schools, and that every child deserves a dedicated, dynamic teacher regardless of what zip code that child lives in. We believe discrimination is wrong in every instance. We believe in consistency, so if you're going to drug test recipients of public assistance, drug test them all, including corporate chieftains, who are the biggest beneficiaries. We believe that police officers should act professionally under incredibly difficult circumstances, regardless of the suspect's race. We believe taxes should be kept as low as possible while still providing a sound safety net for the neediest, a robust education for all, decent health care for the elderly and the destitute, and other basics. We believe politicians of any party should keep their promises, avoid the appearance of personal gain from the public trust, and look out for the general welfare, not that of any one special interest. We believe there are people of worth beyond our tight circles, and there are neighborhoods beyond our own with different histories, perspectives, and needs. We believe offenders have paid their price when their sentence is up and should be helped to assimilate back into society, and that that's better for the community than neglecting them and watching them commit another crime. We believe there are peace-loving Muslims. We do not believe President Obama was born in Kenya. We believe in the separation of church and state. We believe more place built with public and private money is the housing-first approach in a model for how to help the chronically homeless. We believe Charlotte will need effective mass transit to handle its continually swelling population. We believe if you're a fan of a politician solely because he has a D or an R after his name, you're not paying attention. We believe we have only one planet, and we should protect it for our grandchildren. And if that earns us the label of liberal, in your eyes, Mr. Fry, so be it. We approach the issues of the day with an open mind and are guided by those principles, not by blind devotion to any political party. And that, sir, is the honest truth.
That's kind of beautiful.
It was so straightforward and honest. And I got to reading it, I had to read it like two or three times, and I thought, he just described why I'm a liberal or a progressive or whatever other pejorative they want to hang on me.
Yeah, because the lovely part of this is that in answering it the way he did, he made it clear that conservatives aren't all of those things.
Exactly.
And that none of those things are anything that's bad to be.
Exactly.
And in fact, to be the antithesis of those things, and in fact be a conservative, is bad. Personally bad, relationship bad, family bad, community bad, state bad, national bad, globally bad.
Yeah. So when they decide that we're the reason we can't have nice things, I just point to that list.
Well, exactly.
It was very well written.
And in a way, in a backhanded way, it reminds me of that vehicle photo that found its way to my Facebook page.
The guy who was anxious, A-N-K-S-H-U-S?
Yeah, the very one. I don't know how far that thing has slid down my page, but this is, and more. You're seeing more and more of these things in Merca. People taking, like, white shoe polish and writing on their cars.
They do it here, too, a lot.
And it's deeply disturbing because without why should we be surprised, Carol? If you're willing to go pay good money for white shoe polish and then write on your car, I'm guessing it's a verb too far to expect it to be grammatically correct or even sane.
It was. There is a man here who drives a very nice car. He's an old man, and he went and had this professionally done, had all the lettering done, and it's all Alex Jones propaganda all over his car.
Oh, he paid to have it look smart?
Yes, and it reads so dumb. Here it is.
Oh, you
here
got
it? Hillary Hitler Squarepants Clinton is a want-to-be dictator, D-I-C-K-T-A-T-O-R. If the bomber doesn't take your guns, Squarepants will. She is anxious, A-N-K-C-H-O-U-S, to score points with the New World Order.
And I'm still working on how to really pronounce anxious.
Anxious. Google Agenda, A-J-E-N-D-A 21.
And that's not Virginia 21.
That's not Virginia 21.
We don't. But the thing is, we really don't know what he was trying to spell. Was it Virginia 21? Inquiring minds want to know.
And how many Virginias can you fit in one minivan?
A
not 21.
Lot. A lot.
A lot. Now, the other story that I wanted to talk about harkens back to your conversation yesterday.
Yes.
Over what happened at the Twin Peaks restaurant.
Okay, which has now had its franchise yanked, I might add.
Indeed, because, you know, they're very concerned about the safety of their patrons. But I started doing a little background searching into this franchise.
Yes.
Because I thought, Twin Peaks, I mean, it just seemed so, for a franchise restaurant, it seemed like it was a little, I mean, was it a retro Twin Peaks on the...
Like with David Lynch and dwarves and forests and stuff?
Silly
right?
Silly me.
No, it's something to do with breastises, I'll bet.
They call it a breastaurant.
I hate being right.
Yes. Of course, I call it Titties or Us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite among all the titles, down near the Tennessee-Alabama line, there's a little place called Booby Bungalow.
Oh, God. Yes, they attribute their success to a basic understanding of the sexes. Men are simple creatures, so you don't have to go too crazy to get them in the door. They felt that Hooters was just way too tame.
Yeah, too classy.
So they sent a memo out to their scantily clad waitresses who have to tie these little half shirts up under their breastises to make them push up and out. And it's their brand personality. Our guests love us because we are a rugged man lodge, irreverently witty, playfully attentive, energetic, and arrogantly better. Raving fan identity, what our customers would love to say about themselves. I am the man. I believe in freedom, bacon, working hard, and playing harder. I like attention from beautiful girls and being recognized in front of the guys. I got game. I deserve to drink cold beer and catch the game without being asked what I'm thinking. Now get me a beer. Pretty please.
Carol, there are so many things I am absolutely unwilling to say in response to any of that.
Yeah.
Oh, I love their logo. Twin Peaks, eats, drinks, scenic views.
Mm-hmm. So now understand, the franchise owner knew that something was going down in that restaurant. The police knew something was going down in that restaurant. Nobody did anything to stop it.
Right. Yeah. How about a little crime prevention on the front end?
What was that Batten was saying? A cure is cheaper than the prevention?
Well, like, there is that.
Nine dead? You can't get undead.
You know, you're right.
Nine deaths, the recovery of about 100 weapons, 170 arrests.
And I'm sure they court. No, they couldn't do anything on the front end, Carol, because that is a demographic, you know, whether it's your Bandidos, your Armadillos, your Aardvarks, your Assegais, no, it was really just a razor, or your Scimitars or whatever. They court that business. And frankly, so does Hooters.
Well, it says in the aftermath of the violence, the restaurants come under some scrutiny for hosting bike nights that attract large numbers of bikers from different gangs. So this was their hangout.
Yeah.
And why not?
Well, I mean, you got a mindset there, and you know, I don't want to sit here and stereotype everybody who rides a big, loud, noisy motorcycle, because I've been known to be fond of those. But there's something in the law that goes all the way back to merry oldie England, called an attractive nuisance.
Yes.
And this is not with reference to the breastises of anybody using the word attractive. That is to say, well, let's say anything that sort of asks for trouble.
Like putting a swimming pool in your backyard without putting a fence around it?
Exactly. Exactly. A cement pond. Precisely.
There you go.
And because something bad is simply going to happen. And to a certain extent, the entire marketing philosophy of this chain, and I'm looking at their homepage now, is an attractive nuisance.
Everything about it.
I mean, Twin Peaks Bikini Contest 2015. The temperature,
and
it shows a silver lamé string bikini, and it says, the temperature isn't the only thing that's rising. Please tell me they don't bill themselves as family friendly.
Well, yeah.
Come on, little Cletus Jr., we're going in the Twin Peaks, and you're going to see what it means when things are rising. I was reading there where Dr. James Dobson says that might keep you from catching the homo. Seeing things rising.
Yep.
No, and of course, in true fascist form, they've got a military appreciation menu. Now, wouldn't that just be a little too much from the goddess of irony? They've got a military appreciation menu, so there you are. You're trying to battle back the effects of PTSD. So they got a military appreciation menu, and you're going to go down and you're going to get a burger and fries and a glass of beer, because, you know, you're home from Afghanistan, and you're still hearing the gunfire and waking up in a cold goddamn sweat in the middle of the night and screaming and stuff like that. And Afghanistan breaks out in the fucking parking lot.
Yeah.
Well, you might be interested to know that the pushback is out there, because apparently the message has been received on social media that we really think that these bikers should be referred to, or that perhaps no one should be referred to, as thugs. Here's a quick little bit of audio you might find enjoyable, Carol. Stand by.
Well, I think you broke it down properly, which is there's a media double standard, and then there's also a response double standard, right? The media double standard is that, you know, when we are talking about this in relation to people of color, particularly African Americans in cities, particularly northern cities, and we have to make sure that we have that regional distinction made here. This is happening in Texas. Almost all of the incidents we've been talking about where young black men have encountered police officers have been in the cities to which black people migrated during the Great Migrations in both the first and second wave. This is not the rural South we're talking about.
Okay, just so people know, this person who is sounding incredibly intelligent is Charles Blow from the New York Times. The stupid is on the way.
To dislodge our idea of what race and racism could look like from being a southern thing to being a national thing, and particularly the North has to start looking at theirs. And the fact that we as a media are centered, like the national media is centered in the North and the East and out West, kind of colors how language that we use to discuss.
Be specific.
Whether or not we're going to call people thugs or not. Whether or not we're going to just say that there are gangs, whether or not we're going to call this a melee, whether or not we're just going to call this a brawl, which is what I've seen a lot of. When you see 9 people dead, you know, possibly hundreds injured, 170 people arrested, that is not necessarily what I call a brawl. And whether or not you're going to apply the word thug to one group of people, and this is not just about like white people applying it, this is the president applying it, this is the mayor of Baltimore applying it, this is about a culture that looks at blackness and says that it sounds like a certain thing, it looks like a certain thing to me, and therefore I am refracting that back onto them.
Okay, I'm hearing you making the geographic distinctions and also talking specifically about coverage, and I know you're nodding, and I read your piece, you write a lot about white privilege, but can you also be specific on police response, and then I'm coming to you here.
Yeah, let's give two examples here, one with respect to policing, and again, when we're talking about bias, we're not singling out, this is where it gets hard, it's not saying, okay, that one cop, that one person, it's a trend, it's a pattern, it's something we're all guilty of. Look, we have police who knew that these quote-unquote criminal biker gangs
would be at the restaurant,
armed to the hilt, would be at the restaurant, and they sat back and waited and watched. And meanwhile, in everywhere else in the country, we find black and brown men routinely stopped and frisked just walking on their way to work, let alone guns pulled on them when they're, you know, walking on their way to work or peacefully protesting in places like Ferguson or Baltimore. So the difference of the police response there after the arrests were made, they're just sitting around, they're not handcuffed. And then also, it is the media response. It's the fact that when black and brown people commit crimes, we note their race. And when white people do, we don't note their race. We don't, you know, the majority of mass shootings are caused by white men, but we don't say we have this epic problem of whiteness. What's the matter with white-on-white crime?
Isn't, though, one Why major not? Distinction?
You know, there's way too much intelligent going on there, Carol. You know there's got to be some stupid lurking in the background, right?
I was going to say, so far, so good.
That's Charles Blow and Sally Cohn. The stupid is on the way. You may rest assured.
Okay.
Yeah. This may take a couple of minutes.
Being the fact that these were criminal. This is criminal.
Yeah. Skip a bit, sister. Ah, here comes the stupid. I think.
Bikers.
The motorcycle bikers.
Yeah.
Of course, the thugs. I mean, I use the word thug, and I mean bad guy when I use the word. I think the word was owned by rappers. They started coming out with songs and calling themselves thugs, and I think that's how this whole thing started with the black community and the young men calling themselves thugs. All right, and I think that's how that all started. But to compare what happened in Baltimore and Waco, two different situations here. We have police that are in an area that is under control after the gunfight. All right, so we got them under control. Of course, you got people standing around. They're not handcuffed, so guess what? They're not under arrest. That's why they're on their cell phones.
That's the thing. 100 critics are pointing out.
Yes, I know, 100, but how do you know the ones that were on their cell phones were the ones that were under arrest or not? I don't see a police officer doing that.
Let's clear.
And just in case you're wondering, I'm going to cut it off here. The third guy talking there is an ex-cop.
Yeah.
He's an ex-cop, Carol. And he will later go on to say to Charles Blow, everybody's got to stop and move on from here. Forget the past. Move on. Charles Blow says, I don't want to forget the past. That's not even a smart thing to say. And then Mr. White Privilege Cop says, I don't want to forget the past. No, and he says, whatever happened 1,000 years ago, stop. Let's move from here. Come on, you're a smart man, he says to the black guy. 1,000 years ago. See, Hello? White privilege? Anybody? Bueller? A thousand years ago? Excuse me? I didn't know I was a thousand years old. The Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act were signed into law within 2 years of my birth. Trust me, I'm not Methuselah. I mean, it's astonishing. So I don't know. Dare we hope that Thug is gone from for-profit media speak? Or is that too much to hope for?
It's too much to hope for.
Jesus.
By the way, Charles M. Blow just had a book come out.
Yeah.
It's a memoir. It's called Fire Shut Up in My Bones. And it is so beautiful. If you get a chance to read it, do.
I absolutely will. Maybe, I don't know, maybe he's touring with it right now. Or doing phone conversation interviews or something. Who knows?
We can hope.
Yeah, indeed. A little bit of a follow-up. Are you aware that remember the fella who was going blind, who was mad at the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, I sent him a message on his fundraiser.
Well, it turns out he has suddenly become a supporter of the Affordable Care Act and the Medicaid and the Medicaid expansion.
Really?
Yeah. He just put out a statement because, see, a whole lot of the people who are helping to fund his necessary surgery are liberals.
I know it.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I haven't seen a big splashy story where the fine, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered proprietors of Memories Pizza, who absolutely refuse to take one of their crummy pizzas to a gay wedding reception, have given any of their $800,000 to him.
Or to anyone.
That was $800,000 for the poor. Poor them.
Yeah.
Louise Lang said, now that I'm looking at what each party represents, my wife and I are both saying, hey, we're not Republicans. And he said, I put the blame on everyone, but I do mainly blame Republicans for their pig-headedness. They're blocking policies that could help everyone. I'm in the situation I'm in because they chose not to expand Medicaid for political reasons, and I know I'm not the only one.
Oh, so when it came home to roost on him, he had an epiphany.
Yes, NIMBY.
Backyard. I couldn't donate to his fundraiser because, you know, I couldn't find the bootstraps button.
Yeah, right. Where you help him pick himself by his own?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I mean, this is Mark, and this is where, you know, you got to raise yourself up by your bootstraps. I just felt that to give him any money would be to, you know, lull him into that.
Yeah, he'd just lay there in his welfare hammock.
That entitlement mentality. So the only really good thing that I could tell him was, you know, get a job.
Yeah. You moocher. Yeah.
Moocher.
Right. I guess we can say better late than never, but his vision improved dramatically when people decided to reach out and invite him to be part of a community, the community of caring about him. But the fact remains, he lives in South Carolina, Stan Carroll. And the governor there is a woman who calls herself Nikki, whose real name is Nimrata, but she can't tell the world her name is Nimrata, or particularly South Carolina, because then they will not vote for her brown butt. And she just fails the paper bag test by, you know, a couple of shades, and she's married some money, so therefore that alleviates some of her brownness, but not enough that she can go around saying, hi, y'all, I'm Nimrata, and I'm going to be right there beside Lindsey Graham when he announces his presidency campaign down there at Smoldering Chode. No. But she's the reason. And, of course, the South Carolina legislature. But she is primarily the reason, because she was the first line of offense saying, hell no, you Kenyan Muslim socialist, you slurper. We're not going to take free government money to make sure that everybody in South Carolina can go to the doctor when they're sick. That's disgusting. That's communism. She's the one who did that.
Yep.
And again, we come back to that eternal question, Carol, of what does it take? Because, you know, one, there is no advocate for the poor in America, except the poor. The only people who will ever meaningfully advocate for the poor in America are the poor.
That's right.
So what would happen? Let's see. The state capital of South Carolina, Stan, is what? Columbia,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
Yes.
What happens if the poor, say 500,000 or so of them, go and chant all at once, because that would be really loud, Nimrata, we want Medicaid.
Honey, they'd call the National Guard out and start pepper spraying the poors faster than you could say Nimrata.
Pepper spraying, you silly woman. See, that's why you're a woman. They wouldn't pepper spray them poors.
They'd shoot them.
They'd shoot them. Can't have no uppity poors in South Carolina, Stan. Where's Lindsay going to get the help down to Smolder and Chode?
Illegals?
Oh, no, because they're all dreamers now because of the Kenyan Muslim usurper who violated the Constitution. America. Greatest country. Say it with me. Greatest country in the world.
In the world
on
ever.
Earth ever today now.
You got to get your reverb fixed, man.
Well, as soon as I have time to talk to John Fox, I'll figure it out. It's a little complicated. On the old mixer, it was just turn the knob up, turn the knob down.
Did you catch the tweet of God?
No.
Oh yeah. This guy on Twitter, it's under the tweet of God, and
oh, I love the tweet of God.
I love the tweet of God, and he said, Americans are the best at claiming that America is the greatest country in the world ever. How did he say that? I gotta pull this up, man.
Okay.
Damn. Well, I totally forgot about it until you said that. But I love posting his stuff because it's funny. Like his last one last night, he goes, your prayers are hysterical. I ignore every one of them.
Yeah.
Oh, where are you, God?
It's amazing the number of us who find ourselves asking that question.
Where are you, God? hell, I don't know where it is. I've got too much shit on my page.
Yeah, it's like I couldn't have found that picture of the... Of the Kenyan Muslim usurper car in a million years.
Yours is actually less cluttered than mine.
Oh, absolutely it is.
It's hard to be popular.
Oh, it's hard in every possible way. Absolutely.
Yes, it is. Oh, by the way, the other night when that storm rolled through here.
Yeah.
I had some fun.
Oh, that raised some hell.
It raised some hell. I cannot believe my house did not sustain any damage for all the damage that went on outside. There was a tree down by the lakefront that got uprooted. Oh, I was working in the house all morning long Sunday. I get up. I went to open up the side door to let Tess out. And there is a giant tree laying in my yard that missed the shed like by 3 feet. But hit another tree and caused a lot of damage in it. I don't think there's a tree on the place here that didn't get damaged, so I've got, like, tons of crap to clean up.
Delightful. You got some, but lucky for you, it's Hooterville. You won't have a hard time finding somebody with a chainsaw.
Well, Big Daddy's got a chainsaw.
Oh, Mr. Carroll. Yeah.
Mr. Carroll has a chainsaw.
Right. You don't happen to heat with wood, do you?
Well, actually, in the wintertime, I have a very lovely fireplace.
Oh, look at you. If you get it all cut up now, it might be nice and seasoned by the time winter gets here.
Exactly.
And hopefully the copperheads won't crawl in amongst all the little chinks and cracks and crannies and stuff.
I don't go out after it until it gets really, really cold outside, because I know better than to touch the wood pile.
Because they are fond of it.
During warm weather, because they and a whole lot of other things are fond of stuff in there. And if you bring the wood in, I'm careful about bringing it in, too, because if you bring it in and there was something sleeping in there, dormant,
yeah,
it wakes up and it's in the house.
And it ain't happy. No. No, what got after you finally got to us yesterday, and all during the program last night, it sounded like the heavens had absolutely opened up. I mean, it poured. And I was just sitting there going, no derecho, no derecho, no derecho.
Yeah, the winds peaked here at 87 miles an hour.
Jesus!
Yeah. And I fell asleep on the couch because I'm from the Midwest. It storms, you hear the tornado siren go off, you go, meh. Well, you can't do that anymore because of the non-existent climate change and the more severe weather. You shouldn't ignore that stuff anymore. You know how they used to have hurricane parties down in the Gulf, and they don't do that anymore?
Right, and then they started cleaning up the bodies.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. See, it's sort of the same thing here. I got up and went to close that damn lakeside door, and I am not a small woman, Bob, and I could not get that sucker shut.
Ooh!
All my weight behind it. And I finally got down on my knees and finally got it shut, but I couldn't get it to stay shut, and I had to hit the deadbolt.
Did you look up in the sky and see Carly Fiorina on a bicycle?
She looked remarkably like the half governor.
Whose daughter, there's sadness in Wasilla.
The wedding's off.
The wedding is off. Little Bristol.
The born again virgin.
The born again virgin. With the born again virginda.
I thought that thing's more action than a toilet seat.
Oh, I'm glad you said that and I didn't. She was all set to get married up to a good God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist Medal of Honor winner from Kentucky Stan. And then they just put it out there on the Facebook that the wedding planned for May the 23rd will not be held. Instead, they're going to have a barbecue. They're going to have a barbecue in Kentucky Stan, Miss Carol, to celebrate life.
I hope I can get a refund on my plane ticket.
I don't think so. Well, you can always repurpose them and go visit the Creation Museum.
Oh, one more thing. At the risk of sounding like Steve Jobs.
Yes?
One more thing. Google Maps today. If you type nigga house into Google Maps.
Oh, no.
It'll take you straight to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
I thought Google was supposed to be taking care of this sort of thing.
Well, they said, you know, hey, things happen, and, you know, people have gotten up to, you know, pranks before. And I'm like, that wasn't a prank. Pranks, by their very nature, are humorous.
Yeah, like setting Google up so that if you Googled the word Santorum, you got a definition of a frothy mixture of et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
That's funny.
That was funny.
Especially since it's still dogging bro-fro mix.
But, yeah, so I just wanted to say racism is over.
Hallelujah. Glory. And I guess from now on, if there are any freedom. Doesn't the Waco thing point to one other thing too? There were, whether it was Baltimore or Ferguson or Long Island,
mm-hmm.
Or Cleveland, or North Charleston, South Carolina, nobody was running around with guns. Call it the North Korea syndrome, Carol. I was thinking about this the other day. Remember how North Korea chased down a nuclear weapon specifically because it was scared to death, because they are a paranoid pariah state. It was scared to death that the United States was eventually going to invade them.
Absolutely.
And the only way to keep the United States from fucking with you is to have a nuclear weapon.
That's right.
So North Korea went and got a nuclear weapon.
Right.
Well, we have found out, and that's why I call it the North Korea syndrome. How about that? The cops were sitting there waiting for the trouble to start, but didn't do anything to be proactive about preventing it.
Nope.
And instead, because all the bikers had guns, they were allowed to go ahead and behave like pariahs.
Yep.
What does this, what, and I'm not saying this is the answer, but if you were sitting there playing logic games, what would this say to the so-called black community?
That there are two forms of citizenship in the United States. There's full citizenship, and then there's...
Y'all.
Not so citizenship.
Well, it also says to me that the next time they get pissed off, at least according to the rules of engagement from Waco, they should have many, 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 many guns.
Well, yeah, there would certainly be fewer arrests.
Or if they were arrested, maybe they'd get to sit around and check their social media.
Sure. That's very funny. You realize those people in Baltimore are black still, right?
Oh, that's right. The cops would just come in and use the guns as an excuse to mow them down like wounded knee.
Because they're afraid. They're very, very afraid. You know, a cop saying I'm afraid is akin to Hobby Lobby holding a closely held belief.
Right.
You can't respond to it because that's all they have to say, and then it's accepted.
Because naturally they wouldn't, right? Yeah. Yeah. And but I got a feeling the problems aren't over and won't be for quite some time in Texas, because we're talking cultural stuff, Carol. That isn't just a biker gang brawl. Gun battle? That's too many syllables. It has to be a brawl. Shootout? No. That's more syllables than brawl. Remember a few years ago, and it's before we became
in Baltimore. It was a riot. In Ferguson, it was a riot.
Right, but it was just a brawl. In ways.
Is that too many syllables? Riot?
Yeah, that's two. Brawl only takes one.
Urgh.
Yeah, but it's also the word you use if you're describing where the idiotic Republican lady sticks her firearm. It's in her brawl.
In her brawl.
Yeah. But remember several years ago when the Texas judge who sat in judgment of hundreds, if not thousands, of people, was caught on tape beating the snot out of his daughter over a video game. Yeah.
Yeah.
There are systemic problems in that state. I have here the story from KCBD against one Judge Carter Schildknecht, Schildknecht. And despite the sounds of the name, Judge Carter Schildknecht is not a guy.
Really?
And she is. She was sanctioned last week for violations of the Texas Code of Judicial Conduct. That's violations, as in lots of them. Among them, about a year ago, 10 months ago, last July, Schildknecht referred to the district attorney, one Michael Monk, as a New York Jew. Mm-hmm.
Really?
And later that month, she had someone removed from her courtroom because judges can be real martinets if they want to.
Oh, yeah.
She had someone removed from her courtroom because she said she didn't want to see his face. And the person whose face she did not want to see was someone who had a beard who looked like a Muslim.
Ah.
And even so, she is... Even so, she's not that apologetic. She says, "I may be too blunt, but I'm not biased or prejudiced against New Yorkers or Jews.
Or terrorists.
Or people with beards." Jesus God. There it is. It was last September. She criticized an assistant district attorney, an attorney working for the guy who was a New York Jew. She said, "You look like a Muslim, and I wouldn't hire you with it," talking about his beard.
Well, hell, I mean, we're talking about Texas. I thought for sure they'd offer her a cabinet position in Greg Abbott's administration.
She'll probably wind up in Congress. That's how, you know, remember, Louis Asparagus Gohmert was a judge on the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals before the voters of the 1st District of Texas stand. Begged him to go and represent them and prevent aspersions upon their asparagus.
Yeah, I'm still not over that.
No, not even. But there are just these little clues out there, these little breadcrumbs on a trail that leads not from but to the Minotaur that make me think that it's going to get worse before it gets better, Carol.
Well, I kept saying that, but Jesus Christ, Bob, it keeps getting worse. I don't say that anymore because I'm afraid it's actually going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, right. It's getting worse or worse.
How much worse can it get? I mean, they've got almost everything.
That's the point. That's the one you don't ask. Because there are oodles of opportunities like the fact that the NRA down in Louisiana stand, if you get busted for stalking, the NRA says you should the stalker should be able to keep his guns, his freedom protectors.
That's right, because they like their jobs finished.
Because that's what a stalker needs, more firearms. Right? Yeah.
People convicted of domestic violence in Hooterville can't get their guns taken away either.
You're kidding.
Nope.
I mean, I think that's actually still a law here in West Virginia, Stan, but there's only so much work that one teabagger legislature can get done in one session.
Not here. Of course, they didn't get a lot done this session. A lot of things were left undone because the Speaker of the House was caught up in a sex scandal, sexting with a 19-year-old intern. And they had to swear in a new Speaker of the House with 7 hours left in the legislative session. So there was a lot of things that did not get addressed. Because sexting is far more important than taking care of the people's business.
Well, I mean, that is the people's business, right? Oh, God. I mean, Tuesdays are hard around here sometimes, Carol.
I know. Which is why I had to lead in with that good blog post, because I wanted to at least bring something positive to the table. There was a sane voice out there, and I wanted to share it.
Well, amen to that. And that was a good one, because somebody was, well... And the thing is, I'm willing to bet, I've read a few of their stories from time to time, I'm willing to bet that the Charlotte Observer ain't that liberal.
It's not.
But the thing is, in the Bircher, Death, or Bagger, Booger Eater mindset, anyone who, if every sentence does not begin with Ronald Reagan, peace be upon him, is somehow liberal. And don't love Merkel.
Anything left of WorldNet Daily.
Well, exactly. I mean, God, what was that? Just before I let you go.
Yes.
Have you followed this kerfuffle over George Snuffleupagus?
No.
Okay, so the for-profit media doesn't mean much to me, but they're kind of fun to watch, you know, the way a demolition derby is.
Yeah, I get that.
So it turns out that over the course of 3 years, George Snuffleupagus, who once worked for Bill Clinton in the White House, Bart Cop, peace be upon him, used to refer to George Snuffleupagus as Judas Stephanopoulos because he worked so hard to distance himself from Bill Clinton when he left in order to get his for-profit media job. And Charlie Pierce to this day refers to him as that Clinton guy shocked by blowjobs. Well, it turns out over the course of 3 years, he donated $75,000 to the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah.
Which is a 501c3 charity.
Does amazing work.
Yeah, they really do. They do some incredibly good work.
Yes,
and there's a gap about a majillion billion miles wide between Bill and Hillary's speech making, and Bill's in particular, which is what they do to keep the lights on and keep them in gas station pizza. and then there's what the philanthropy does, which is incredibly vital, valuable, global work, you know, related to things like HIV in Africa.
Absolutely.
Right. So, George Snuffleupagus, over the course of 3 years, gave $75,000 to the Clinton Foundation. He didn't write a $25,000 checks to Bill Clinton and put in the memo BWERRUN beer run. he made legitimate charitable tax deductible contributions to the Clinton Foundation, and now the right wing are screaming, Carol, screaming, and I feel kind of icky defending George Snuffleupagus because he's as much of a problem as, well, you know, Wolf Blitzer, so poor, so black.
My bitch with Stephanopoulos is that he lets people sit and lie right in front of him, and he does nothing to challenge them.
Right, because he knows he'll never get him back on his program. You know, Chuck Todd.
That's right.
Chuck Todd admitted that a few months ago.
Yep.
But the thing is, it is being portrayed as some sort of monstrous, monumental ethical breach of his journalistic ethics.
It's not. It just isn't.
It's being played out there along the lines of when Keith Olbermann got crucified for having not disclosed, having made actual political contributions.
Yeah, $2,500 to Raul Grijalva.
Yeah.
Woo! $2,500. Yeah. That'll send the man to the White House.
Yeah, boy, I tell you what, there goes them journalistic ethics. But apparently, and I mean, I'd be willing to bet this way, apparently the right wing are going to nail George Snuffleupagus's pelt to the door. They got another one. Because, you know, his integrity can't be trusted because he doesn't get up every morning. Well, you know, when he's talking in idle conversation, he doesn't refer to Mrs. Clinton as Hitlery.
703 in the Hitler pool.
Oh, who had it? Who had 703?
I can't see the chat room, so.
Let me check. Yeah, damnable Java, right? No. Apparently, the jackpot will roll over. No one had 703.
Ooh, Hitler Powerball.
You betcha.
You gotta play to win.
Oh, Carol Baker, thank you for a lovely conversation on this here Titanic Tuesday. I do appreciate it.
As you, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it, and it's good to talk to you again.
You know, we wait all night for calls like these, as the saying
goes.
Take care, Carol.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
From the distant shores of Lake Hooterville, the dulcet tones of Carol Baker. Okay, so it is 4 minutes past 8 o'clock here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. 7:04 in Central, 5:04 in the Pacific time zone. Oh, God. I can't keep you calculated because the time changes screw me up. I'm not sure what time it is in Sydney. What time is it in Sydney, Robert? So let's take a little break and come back to your calls. Both lines are, of course, open. Well, no, one of them's not. The Herald line is not. Maud, the Gizmo line is open, 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. And, of course, email's wide open always, and so is Twitter, and so is Facebook. Enjoy all of it if you wish. Oh, let's see. What I don't. Okay, yeah, this works. Going out to those brawlers in Waco. Jeez. Brawlers. Who aren't bugs. They're way too white to be thugs. This is the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. That ain't what that is. I did not want Jim Croce. Try again. Yeah. The hour number three underway here at the Horn Titanic Tuesday, and we're working on looking for a match, courtesy of our anonymous contributor this evening, a match to the $100 put forward there. We are one-tenth of the way toward it. Thank you very kindly, Glenn. Let's see. No, wait. 3.5 tenths. We are 35% of the way there. So, yeah, $65 remain to match that 100, which will leave us only $100 to go to be done with the usual evening's fundraising. Thank you, one and all. Over to the Skype line, also known as Harold. Is that you, Jim?
Yes, sir.
How in the world are you?
I'm here. I just enjoyed very much your conversation with Carol. I always do. She always brings a great deal to the table.
Yes, she does. She doesn't leave it on the field either.
I wanted to clear something up about this Lindsey Graham thing.
Yes.
It was, I think, Friday on IMUS.
Yeah.
They were talking about Senator Graham, and and one of the members of his staff mentioned his new PAC called Funding American Greatness.
Well, okay, okay, that's okay.
And then somebody else caught it. I don't know if it was Connell McShane or whomever. And, you know, he looked like he just swallowed his morning cup of latte. Folks, you know, you drag that out as an acronym, and you've got something going.
Yeah, and I'm looking here. That had to be, because, you know, IMA still does that kind of thing. That had to be a prank.
Well, IMA looked like somebody hit him with a cattle prod.
Well, that's probably because he was expected to get suspended again.
Oh, but he didn't say it. It was somebody else who said it. And then another guy came on and started talking about Lindsay getting a new pair of shoes.
What?
Yep, that Lindsay was getting a new pair of shoes made by some special cobbler in there in D.C. or its environs, and then started talking about that he was so happy with them because they were the lightest loafers he ever wore.
Oh. Well, we are back to, Jim, you are incorrigible again, aren't we?
I'm just repeating what I heard.
I realize that.
Or I heard.
Yeah, I understand, right. No, you're still incorrigible.
Why?
Don't make me explain.
Enthrall me with your acumen.
Funding American greatness followed by magnificent shoes that were the lightest loafers he'd ever worn. Really?
Yes, they did.
Oh, for that I'm going to have to take a little extra time when the program's over and send you the picture of Her Highness President Scarlett Lindsay Doolittle. Yeah.
I know, but, I understand, you know, you have your own reasons for calling his plantation or his pied-à-terre in South Carolina what you do, but I still think Peckerwood would be a much better name.
Well, it might be, but I came up with Smoldering Chode, and I'm proud of it. I'm kind of like the little kid who takes his crayon drawing and has to have it home and has it from kindergarten and has to have it put up on the refrigerator. Smoldering Chode is mine. Peckerwood is not.
I understand.
And, of course, that itself, what I just said, is probably problematic. So, you know, what's a guy to do?
Well, you know, hey, that was your creation, and I just made a suggestion. Well, maybe he has a little place else they could call Peckerwood. I don't know. But when I heard that thing on IMUS, and I said, oh, good Lord. And, by the way, IMUS is leaving TV in June.
Is he leaving radio, too?
He's going to be on radio intermittently. He's going to go down to Texas because his son is really involved with the local rodeos there and is into calf roping or something like that. And I thought, well, you know, I don't particularly like to see little calves roped and dragged to the ground. But then Imus came on and had this tremendous tirade against bullfighting in Spain and, you know, and what happens there, you know. So as much as I agree sometimes or disagree with Imus, I still appreciate him, and I still appreciate his sense of humor.
And he's on what, Fox Business Channel?
Yeah, he's on FBN.
So I have a new reason to be hopeful. Maybe if that slot opens up, Rupert Murdoch and Roger Ailes will put their brain trust together and go and do what they should have done decades ago, or at least years ago, and hire Joe Scarborough to be on Fox where he freaking belongs.
Oh, God. No, I hope they don't put him on there. Oh, Lord. Well, I'm sure they can always find somebody that will be worse. Because without a doubt, Scarborough can be the biggest butthole that ever.
Yeah, but he has. But the whole point is that he has no business, Jim, on a network that bills itself as lean forward and progressive. I mean, there's not a micro millimeter of Joe Scarborough that's progressive. He's just an old, worn out, tired contract on America, Gingrich for pig licking.
That's basically it, and pretty acerbic and pretty insulting as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I can't imagine why he would have been placed on MSNBC. I really don't. I mean,
you might recall that he wound up in there precisely because Don Imus screwed up.
Yeah, well, that business with
the Rutgers women's basketball team,
right,
went down,
and then they had a number of people who were like subbing, like Stephanie Miller and stuff like that, which was really refreshing. And then, of course, Joe Scarborough came into the picture, and then Imus reappeared on Fox Business News. And there it is, and there you have it. And I will say for Imus, he does have some very good comedy people on there. I mean, have you ever heard Rob Bartlett?
No, I haven't. I don't think.
Oh, God. He does these imitations of Pope Francis, the Godfather, and who's the guy who got shot who publishes the Dirty Magazines. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes.
And there's a bit of humor on there. It's a curious admixture of a program, but it's enough to make me want to watch it to see what's going to be said next. And when they had that thing on about Lindsey Graham, I thought to myself, oh, Lord. But at this point, I don't think Imus gives a shit or gives a damn, excuse me.
Well, and I'm guessing Lindsey won't be making an appearance on the program.
I don't think so, but when they put Funding American Greatness on there and Colin McShane almost fell out of a chair, and, oh boy. And then they started speaking in Spanish to each other, and Imus used one word in Spanish because, you know, they asked him, you know, how well he spoke Spanish since he's going to that part of the country. And he just said, Maricón. And I said, oh, well.
Yeah, well.
there went the neighborhood, you know, or whatever. But, you know, nobody called him up on it. But, you know, there it is.
I think his viewership is so tiny that the people who would have been offended by the use of that word didn't even know it happened. I mean, the folks over at Right Wing Watch, they'll watch a Looney Tune like Chappie Gordon Klingenschmidt or Pastor Brother Governor Mike Huckabee, but I, you know, maybe they'll...
How is he doing now as far as his percentages are concerned?
None of those neo-maxi Zoom dweebies have much. I think the highest rated one's around 16-17%. And most of the rest of them are hovering somewhere down in the low single digits. But when a party has become as attenuated and fractiously, rabidly insane as the GOP is, there's a constituency for everybody.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
if
your thing is the fetuses, you got a choice between Ted Cruz and Pastor Brother Governor Huckabee. If your thing is national security, you got a choice between Lindsey Graham and Scott Walker, who just said, "Hey, look, everybody, I got on an airplane. I am fit to be commander in chief now." There's somebody for everybody.
I guess so. I guess Pastor Huckabee still has his Daisy BB rifle that he used to, that he still polishes, that he got when he was a little boy.
Oh, mercy sakes.
I just love that particular thing that he had say on there. But going back to the initial thing, email I sent you about the needs assessment from
So tell me about this. What?
Well, the thing for le- the in bold print, oh, I don't know what the size of type it will be, but it says, this is an official document. Do not destroy.
And did in the upper right corner, did it also say pre-sort first class?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, see, that means it's okay to destroy.
Well, they said, do not destroy. I filled it out and sent it in. And, you know, and I had some comments that I wrote at the bottom. And I'm sure.
Well, what needs was he assessing? I mean, I'm
everything from the need for continuation of coal and
we need to make those Keebler coal elves get busy and make more coal. And if we
yeah, that, and then it had to do with the Affordable Care Act and whether or
we
not
need to repeal that now and have some and have people dying in freedom.
Want to know if you were benefiting from the Medicare expansion. Oh, it was, front page and back. And it was extremely exhausting. I mean, I would take a look at it and I said, I'm going to throw this in the trash, I'm going to fill it out. But I said, I don't care. I'll fill it out. And all the address was to the office in Huntington. So I just wrote, when I put it in the mail, I put my name on it, and I said, please, reply and put my phone number on it. I said, I'd like to talk to you.
This will not happen.
I guess not, but I mean, this thing was...
No, because this was all put together by a marketing company that was hired with money given to Evan Jenkins by the Koch brothers and or Alec.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, they wanted you to treat that, you treat it as an official document, like you get something from the Internal Revenue Service or whomever, and they definitely said that, hey, do not destroy this document. And, it was almost like mandatory that you fill it in. But I thought to myself, I wonder if Bob got
it. When did this arrive? You're not exactly a notorious GOP operative over there, Jim.
No.
No, I like the way you say no. Well, neither am I. So they must, somehow I'm offended now.
Well, basically when I read the document, I took it was a needs assessment. I mean, it's like, when I was in school and learning how to construct curriculum, the first thing you do with any type of curriculum is you conduct what's known as a needs assessment. That's like step one. In any form of curriculum construction, in which you find out what people need and what concerns them and what can be done to ameliorate any existing problem. That's the way it was sort of laid out. And like I said, I started to throw it away. I said, I think the guy needs to hear what I had to say. I'll probably never hear from him. I do know a member of Ray Hall's staff who is now working for him because, she's very good. She's very efficient. I mean, she needs her job.
Wait, she just transferred over?
Right. I mean, she's the one who dealt with most of the people in the district. Very well liked. Very personable individual. And she transferred over because I talked with her. And I said, I'm glad you had your job. One of the reasons I continue to vote for Nick Joe was because of you, because I want you to keep your job. And you've been so kind to me in the past. So, I mean, the young lady did what she had to do. I mean, she has a family. She has to eat. she has to pay her bills. She needs insurance. And I mean, what else can you do in a situation like that?
Right. Well, again, those velvet-lined manacles.
Well, yeah, Bob, I mean, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I've been in contact with that office for years and years and years and years ever since I've been here. And they've always been very good to me. And as a matter of fact, I had a problem with, Federal Blue Cross Blue Shield. And I tried to deal with those people, and that's kind of like dealing with, you know, the barn door.
Right.
They ain't gonna open. And so I surfaced the issue through a phone call, and I did get an interim response, and then, of course, who's to say what the final response is going to be? But that's Congressman Jenkins. I mean, like I say, I don't know the man, what you said. I've never heard of him before. I mean, he was a Democrat at one time, and now he switched parties.
No, he was a Democrat, and he was a Republican, and he was a Democrat, and now he's a Republican again.
It's just amazing how these people can switch parties over here. I mean, good Lord in heaven.
In a state like that, I mean, look, I think based on voter turnout and based on voter numbers, Jim, in the state of West Virginia, a rock-solid 50% of the Democratic Party is Republicans. Or think they are.
I think that's pretty, I think you're pretty much right on the money with that, actually. Sure, you certainly are.
Yeah, because, you know, they run out and vote to save the little fetuses and have the Keebler coal elves make some more coal in the ground if we can just get the EPA to stop oppressing the poor coal industry. And for instance, you want an exercise, and again, I'm not trying to hold you on the line or anything, but
no,
I think you'll have some appreciation for this. During the Green News Report, our good friends Brad and Desi brought up the fact that Shelley Moore, and I sent Brad and Desi a note letting them know that here in Appalachistan, C-A-P-I-T-O is pronounced camel toe. Shelley Moore camel toe has introduced a bill in the Senate, because she's a senator now, and doesn't that just make my make my bile boil right up from my aging, ailing gallbladder? She's introduced a bill to undo the CO2 regulations that were promulgated by the Environmental Protection Agency.
Oh, that was one of the elements of the questionnaire, too, or the needs assessment. How do you feel about the EPA? And whether or not is taking advantage of people and destroying the economy of the state.
Eating babies and, right, yeah, a little butter and jam. Well, here's the fun part, though, and this goes to show how unutterably, incomprehensibly stupid Shelley Moore, daughter of Arch Capito, is. The whole, do you know, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot or anything, but Jim, do you know the origins of the EPA CO2 regs?
No, I don't, Bob. Please tell me.
Okay. So it goes back to 2007, and we might recall that in 2007, America was still living the way America is supposed to by having a white man in the White House. His name was Dim Leader, George W. Bush.
Right.
And his administration had filed suit and had taken it all the way to the Supreme Court, which has a Republican majority on it, mind you. Okay? Still with me?
Still there.
And they sought clarification from the Supreme Court, and maybe this is a case they teach little baby lawyers on cross-examination never to ask a question to which they do not already know the answer.
Oh, well, that's axiomatic in any legal situation. We know that.
And the way it was explained to me a million years ago was the smart aleck lawyer doing a cross-examination. He was the defense counsel, and he's cross-examining an eyewitness who was a clerk in a convenience store that got robbed. And so the lawyer leads him through this line of questioning. You saw him. You saw him, did you not? Yes, and you claim you can identify him. Yes, I did. And you saw him for, what, less than 15 seconds? Definitely less than 15 seconds. Did you see him for less than 10? I saw him for less than 10. You saw him for less than 5, didn't you? Yes, I did. You saw him for less than 2 seconds, didn't you? Yes, I did. And so the brilliant Clarence Darrow then says, "How in the world, sir, can you claim that you can identify my client?" And the guy goes, "He stuck a gun in my face. His face will be forever burned into my memory. That's him." And the guy was convicted and whatever. So never ask a question to which you don't already know the answer. So the Bush administration sued to get the Supreme Court to declare that CO2 is not a pollutant. Only the Supreme Court said, yeah, it is. And then ordered the EPA to promulgate rules regarding CO2 pollution. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, Shelley Moore Cameltoe wants to abrogate laws that the Congress of the United States, or that the EPA, under order from the Supreme Court of the United States, promulgated. So, the instant that Congress abrogates those rules, the EPA will conceivably, arguably, be in contempt of the Supreme Court because of what the Congress did. But the Congress won't be in contempt because Congress can't be in contempt of the Supreme Court, I guess. I don't know. So that'll mean that in order to not run afoul of the Supreme Court's ruling, the EPA will then have to what? Promulgate new rules about the regulation of CO2 as a pollutant, because the root problem here is that the Supreme Court said CO2 is a pollutant.
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact,
do you see the nature of the
legal?
I hate to even say wrangling, because there's purpose to wrangling.
I mean, really, it's
theater
really
of the absurd. It's Shelley Moore Capito standing there in the Senate waiting for Godot.
Well, she's been waiting for a lot of things, but God only knows.
Well, she's waiting on a brain, but, you know, that and a new wig.
As far as I'm concerned, she's one of the three Stygian witches.
Well, I'm still not convinced Arch Moore's dead. I think that's really Arch Moore up there in a cheap wig.
God, I tell you, the woman can't help how she looks, but she ain't no, as Mae Westwood so says, she ain't no Earl Payton. God.
No, I'm not commenting on her looks. I'm saying I think that's Arch Moore. Because, like the clerk in the convenience store, Arch Moore's face is forever burnt into my memory.
And the eulogy that surrounded his passing. I mean, you would think that the guy was going to ascend straight into heaven.
Well, you'd think he'd been a damn statesman, Jim. He was a crook.
Big time. He was a crook. What federal prison was he in?
He was down. I think he went to Maxwell Air Force Base first, and then they transferred him up to Ashland, Kentucky, or maybe he just spent his time at Ashland. But
normally I used to go to Maxwell Air Force Base for meetings when I was with Air Force, and you could see the people out there, the prisoners there, and I know they had one guy who was trimming the fence with a pair of barber scissors or something like that, and you could walk away or whatever. If you did, they'd bring you back. But I guess it was called, as the guy who used to run Studio 54, who got busted for income tax evasion, he called it the Club Fed or whatever. That's where they had him, Steve Rubell.
Yeah, Club Fed.
Uh-huh, absolutely. But, I mean, when Arch Moore passed away, I mean, it was like this guy had done nothing wrong whatsoever. Nobody ever said anything about his little interregnum when he was a guest of the federal government. And I thought, good Lord in heaven. And then, of course, they brought out the fact that one former West Virginia governor ended up in Chicago driving a cab and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And it was no great reflection upon this state, that's for damn sure.
Well, but the reason for all that, Jim, is because there had been a genuine outpouring of legitimate grief over the passing of Robert C. Byrd. And so, if you've done it under the least of these my brothers, you have to do it also for convicted felons who happened to once be governor of West Virginia.
But you know, Bob, Robert C. Byrd, number one, did not vote to go to Iraq. I mean, he was a good man. He did the very best he could for the state. And I had a lot of respect for him.
He did a lot of good for this state, and I think he did it out of a recognition of how much has been taken from this state, and that it was about damn time the federal government paid a little bit back.
Exactly.
And frankly, if for every dollar of federal money that Robert Byrd brought into this state, you could pile on another 100,000, and it still would not begin to approach the amount of blood, sweat, toil, and tears that have been expended by West Virginians in behalf of the ownership class, the corporate class, the baron class, the Wall Street class, the banker class, the plutocrat class.
Right.
And it's like the conversation I was having with Angry last night, talking about the Hawk's Nest disaster. Thousands of people.
Oh, yeah, the sandstone and the...
Occupational pneumoconiosis.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know anything about that. Maybe it was when I first got here so many years ago. And you explained to me in great detail about what happened to those people who drilled that tunnel and the silicosis and or whatever name you just called it, literally you drowned on dry land.
Yeah.
And the horror of these people.
Well, their lungs turned to concrete. See, black lung is the opposite. Black lung just sort of desiccates your lungs, whereas silicosis turns them into rock.
Your lung.
Turns them into rock.
It literally mummifies your entire bronchial tree.
And all along the way, even after there were rock solid diagnoses, the coal industry and the other industry, they ain't no such thing. They's all just smokers. And of course,
yeah,
the tobacco industry was sitting over in Winston-Salem and Richmond going, nuh-uh! And nobody could decide. Say that it was the damn stupid workers' fault.
Well, you know, people are expendable, and that's why they've always looked at it. But you know, going back to what representation the state did have, we had Ray Hall, who had a lot of seniority on his committee, and then we had Senator Byrd, who certainly had a great deal of influence. He tried to do the best he could, as far as I'm concerned. And now Jay Rockefeller, well, he's gone. And so, basically, in the past 15 years, this state's representation has just gone completely over to the red side, and I think what these people don't realize, what they've done to themselves.
I'll ask the million-dollar question then. Even after it becomes apparent what they've done to themselves, will they know what they've done to themselves, or will there be people like Hoppy Kirchival standing there screaming, oh, if you just elect a couple more Republicans, we'll find some more coal?
Oh, he is too much. He is absolutely too much. I mean, he's worse than our old friend over here that we used to play with all the time.
Yeah.
You know, really.
The Titanic host.
By the way, I have a friend of mine who's working with something called the New River Development Authority and stuff like that. They're trying to bring other types of jobs and stuff like that into West Virginia. And I was talking to him about, you know, well, it's a relatively new thing that's been set up. And I said, well, you know, how's it going? I mean, how productive is this? How successful have you been? And he said, Jim, he said, I hate to tell you this. Every time we find a position or whatever, we can't find somebody who will pass the drug test.
That's what. And see, I think at some point in time, there's going to have to be a wholesale rethink of what drug test means. I mean, I don't want, now granted, I don't want somebody who has been sparking up a number necessarily flying an airplane or running a railroad train, okay?
But, but these are just things that they are looking for as far as the dependability of an applicant to assume the responsibility of that particular job or whatever. But, I mean, you know, asking you, and we talked about this before, I think, briefly, basically your jobs here, or a majority of them, are seasonal jobs.
Well, in the tourism industry, it certainly is. And they are seasonal minimum wage jobs or less, where you have to make it up, where you have to make it up in tips. And so while we've talked a lot about tourism, tourism is not the panacea.
No, it's not.
Because what you wind up with is you've got a little tiny 0.1% of West Virginians who are directly involved in the ownership class of the tourism industry, and they make a fortune. Okay?
Oh yeah, they do.
But everybody else, no, it's a fortune made on the backs of people doing service industry jobs that are seasonal at best.
That's,
I mean, we've got some awesomely cool little restaurants over in Fayetteville. I've told a lot of people my favorites, you know, Pies and Pints over there. My particular favorite right now, Secret Sandwich, Secret Sandwich Society. But
oh yeah.
But the thing is, you know, even they during the off season, you know, they go down to a skeleton crew.
Well, they have to, you know, to keep the doors open.
Sure, I mean, but because it's very grasshopper and ant. I mean, you can go over there right now in the height of the season, and there will be a line out the door. You could not. I had a hankering on Saturday, and you couldn't get in the door at Pies and Pints. And they have expanded in. They've got a huge little for Fayetteville. They got a pretty huge facility over there. They do a very good job. But Secret Sandwich was to the walls too. But again, I don't want to be hard. These are entrepreneurs, and thank God, you know, we don't live in France like George W. Bush said, where they don't have a word for entrepreneur. That always gets a laugh out of you. That's why I mentioned it.
I loved his commencement address about his grades.
Oh, you too. This is for the D students out there. You too can be president.
Yeah, he said you too can be president, and I thought to myself, good God in heaven. Oh, Lord. And that man was in the White House for eight years.
You know, John the First of England was a bad enough king of England that there has never been a King John since.
No.
Yet I fear that we will probably wind up with another President George at some point in time.
Oh, well, I think that's probably in the cards. That's definitely probably in the cards. As a matter of fact, by the time that happens, we're going to wish we had a Richard III.
George P. Bush of Texas. He's already a Texas land commissioner, I think.
Is that what he is now?
Yeah, he's the one that Barbara referred to in 1988 as the little brown one.
Oh, yeah, the dark one or whatever they used to call him. I remember that.
No, and those are my son Jeb's children. We call them the little brown ones. Said it on live TV.
I'll never forget that. Never, never, never. Well, listen, I've enjoyed our conversation. We've sort of gone the whole gamut from me being incorrigible and, you know.
Which you are.
Well, from you, I'm going to
funding American greatness, honest to Pete.
I'm going to take that. Do what now?
Funding American greatness, honest to Pete. I don't think you actually even heard that on Imus. I think you made that up.
No, I did not. No, I did not. I mean, I heard it, and I thought to myself, and, you know, I cut all Imus because I'm at O-Dark 30 at 0600, and I normally cut him on after I watch the news with Eric Taylor, who's the, you know, the new weatherman. He's a real sharp guy on there. And then I cut on the IMUS, and then they started talking about that and the funding for American greatness. And I said, aha. And I thought, well, and then I said, oh, my God, the acronym of that, FAG. And then they started talking about the light and loafer stuff. Bob, I couldn't make this stuff up.
No, I understand. And the thing is, if you recall, do you happen to recall what the original name of George W. Bush's war in Iraq was?
Oh, Lord, no.
Until somebody at the Pentagon caught it. And then somehow it became Operation Iraqi Dust Bowl or Iraqi Operation and whatever, Freedom Fries or whatever. The original name of it, and there are clips out there, the original name of it was Operation Iraqi Liberation.
Iraqi what, sir?
Liberation.
Oh.
I
do remember that.
Yeah, and somebody, oh, and somebody in the Bush administration, holy shit, that expels oil. Fix it!
I do remember that. I mean, it's just amazing how these people sit there and generate these things and stuff like that. But,
anyway. Wouldn't the Pentagon be having wouldn't the Army and the Marines and the Navy be having a hell of a lot less problem if they had named their little summer exercise Operation Really Texas, Please Don't Be So Nervous, You're a Bunch of Paranoid Freaks and We're Not Invading, instead of Jade Helm 15, which leads the paranoids to wonder what went on in all the 14 before it.
You know, Bob, when I look back on that whole thing when Bush went in there, and what has happened since then, the billions of dollars that were just pissed away and the lives that were pissed away or just completely horribly altered. And I remember that clip of George Bush jogging with some guy with two artificial legs in front of the White House. Not to mention the other stuff we used to talk about with Count Dicula and some of the stuff he did. And how, you know, truly this country has just gotten itself into one hell of a mess. And this thing just happened with the loss of this city. One of the chiefs of staff tried to explain. And then a mother came on the air today whose son was a Navy SEAL who died there. And
oh, Jesus.
She went over there and has a bag of sand from that city, and that's the only thing she has to remind her of her son, is a bag of chalk-like sand. And she was extremely vituperative on the airways today about General Dempsey's response to the loss of that city. We just gotten ourselves, you talk about the tar baby, we've really got ourselves in a hell of a thing that we can't get loose from.
Right, and the problem is, I mean, the woman who was talking to John Ellis Bush the other day and said, you know, why are you criticizing Obama over this? We have this mess because of your brother. You know, she got it straight up and right on. But the fact of the matter is, Jim, most of America says, you know, if that sissy Obama hadn't pulled us out of the Iraq in 2007 with his Kenyan Muslim usurper raise, we probably would have achieved victory by now.
There is no victory there.
No, of course not. Neither was Barack Obama president of the United States when George W. Bush signed the withdrawal agreement. But try to explain that to Mr. and Mrs. America.
They simply don't have the ability, or they don't have the desire to listen.
Now, Mr. and Mr. America, they probably understand. Mrs. and Mrs. America probably understand. But Mr. and Mrs. America are out there worried about fetuses and traditional marriage. They weren't even paying attention when George W. Bush said, okay, we're going to get out of there.
You know, I'll tell you something. And I'm going to let you go because I know you got somebody who wants to talk. The last conversation I had with our dear friend over here, you know who I'm talking about, when he let me back on the radio.
The Titanic intellect, yes.
Mm-hmm. I said, Steve, this is a real problem as I see it.
What?
I said, all of you people and your listeners are just pissed off because you've got a black man in the White House.
Click.
No. Oh, yeah, he clicked on me. And then, for the first time on that program, there were four black callers in a row.
Saying, Jim's right?
Yeah. And they roasted his ass like you wouldn't believe.
Beautiful thing.
Well, listen, you take care, and I've said all I had to say, and I will just remain ensconced in my own incorrigibility. And again, I thank Carol Baker. She's just a, she's a hoot. I think she's wonderful.
Well, thank you, Jim. And you know what? Don't just ensconce in your incorrigibility. Embrace it.
Okay, well.
All right. Take care,
bye-bye.
Jim. Bye now. Our old buddy, Jim, not too far from here at all. Listen, it is 10 minutes before the hour. And I want to share something with you here, and I want to note also that we're still trying to get a match for the kind matching contribution we received a little bit ago via an anonymous contributor. And that means we got $65 to go for that and $165 to go for the evening. All help is good help. Damn stink bugs. Ah! Yuck. Everybody in West Virginia has them. Well, it's terrible. So if you want to help out, the PayPal interface is at, under the tab Contribute at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. No, with the time remaining in the program, actually, more than the time remaining in the program, I just want to draw your attention to how damn good Rick Smith is. He has been working on a project for some time now that is very, very, very engaging. He's got 140 episodes. They're daily, Monday through Friday. It's called Labor History in Two. 2 minutes every day of labor history you will not hear anywhere else. I highly recommend it. I wanted to make sure, and I'm going to start playing it every evening, just because it is that good. And I particularly, I thought I would begin with this evening because the topic is one that is near and dear to my heart. We're talking about something that happened 95 years ago. The Doughboys were home from the First World War. And they were finding out that the world that they had fought to save, make safe for democracy, that they had returned to here in the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, wasn't so democratic. Rick Smith, Labor History in Two.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1920. That year, a national coal strike had won unionized miners a 27% pay raise. But the miners in West Virginia were not in the union. The United Mine Workers decided to launch an intensive campaign to organize this important coal mining region. It took courage to join the union. If the coal operators found out, you would be fired and thrown out of company housing. And so, today in labor history, detectives from the infamous Baldwin Felts Company came to Matawan to evict miners who worked for the Stone Mountain Coal Company. Local police chief Sid Hatfield supported the workers. He showed up where the detectives were eating dinner with a warrant for the detectives' arrest. The detectives quickly produced their own warrant for Sid Hatfield's arrest. The two sides stood in the street in a standoff. Then, suddenly, a shot rang out. Miners dueled with the coal operators' hired guns. When the smoke cleared, seven detectives and two miners were killed. Among the dead was Albert Feltz, one of the detectives who had earlier participated in the Ludlow Massacre in Colorado. Sid Hatfield survived the gun battle and became a national folk hero. The next year, he was assassinated for his role in Matawan. 10,000 angry miners took up arms in what has been called the largest insurrection since the Civil War. The fighting culminated in the Battle of Blair Mountain, where an estimated 1 million rounds were fired between the miners and the company's hired guns before the the U.S. Army intervened and ended the battle. In 1987, John Sayles directed an acclaimed film based on the events in West Virginia. Matawan became a classic, must-see film about the labor movement. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Good stuff, Rick Smith. Good stuff indeed. Quick note, Matewan, just like it's spelled, M-A-T-E-W-A-N, Matewan. Down here, downtown, a couple of miles from where from the mansion here next to the Gulfstream 5 hangar in the garage where we keep the Maybach and where the Cabana Boy does double duty polishing both. There's a little pizza joint. Don't eat the pizza. Oh, for God's sakes, don't eat the pizza. It's terrible. But also there, there are really valuable old photographs hanging on the wall. It adds to the ambiance of the joint. There's a photograph there of four guys in puttees and like jodhpur trousers and shirts, and they were all green. Of course, it's a black and white photograph. And little skinny neckties that hang down to about the bottom of their solar plexus. A little fashion, you know, the evolution of the necktie can be seen there. And it says, West Virginia State Police, Cannelton, West Virginia. And it's just a little shack. And those are four members of the state police, most of whom, when the state police was formed after Matewan, the West Virginia was, State Police was formed out of unemployed Baldwin Felt's thugs. See, that was the proper use of the word thug. Working people in the coal fields of southern West Virginia referred to Baldwin thugs. And Baldwin thugs were the people who came and shot up coal camps, who murdered Sid Hatfield in cold blood on the steps of the McDowell County Courthouse. Those were thugs. Gun thugs. You'll notice that the Battle of Blair Mountain is the Battle of Blair Mountain. It is not the Brawl of Blair Mountain. And the miners fighting were white folks, mostly, some of whom were tried for treason. Mm-hmm. So make no mistake, this country can declare white people to be thugs when they're behaving as such. And this country will use deadly force against white people when white people get up in arms about the fact that they are being starved to death for the sake of corporate profits. But again, that was back in a time when the shackles did not have their velvet linings. Thank you very kindly to our good friend Jug of Punch. He just took care of the rest of the match for our anonymous contributor. Thank you kindly. Thank you kindly, Thomas. And that leaves $100 to be raised, say, between now and 6 o'clock tomorrow evening, prayer meeting Wednesday. A little update coming from our good friend Dwayne down in Kentucky. The goddess of irony never sleeps, Dwayne says. Just an update on me and my condition for you and members of the Horn Family Commune Congregation. I'm looking at getting a pacemaker for my slow heart rate. Hopefully this will correct my condition, Dwayne says. Sacrifice a rubber chicken and a whoopee cushion on my behalf. And they will be, Dwayne, and our fondest hopes for your prompt recovery. Thanks to all of you who keep all of this going. Thank you for your kind words, your kind emails. Thank you for the encouragement. Thank you for the financial support that makes all of this continue to be possible. That is the only way it's possible. Thank you. Thank you for spending your time engaging in this long-form conversation that's been going on for nigh 10 years. Thank you indeed. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACACT, A-C-H-E, dot A-C-T, or A-C-H-E-A-C-T dot O-R-G. And do please remember, run over to my Facebook page or Coal River Mountain Watch's Facebook page or crmw.net and find the link so you can go and vote 10 times a day between now and June the 4th for the Judy Bonds Center for Appalachian Preservation. It means a great deal indeed. Thank you. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.